All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucksters, what the fuck nicks, what the fuckadelics? I am Mark Maron. This is my show, WTF. I'm broadcasting right now from a hotel room 12 floors up, overlooking, I think, what might be the first beautiful fall day in New York City. Man, I didn't know if I was going to make it to New York City. It's been a long few days. And I'll tell you, last week, watching the Weather Channel or CNN or anything, it's amazing. It's the amount of intensity and speculation that goes into bad weather when they've got something to sink their teeth into. I didn't think I was ever going to leave Raleigh, North Carolina, which is where I was at. I went to Raleigh, North Carolina to see my girlfriend Sarah Kane's big art show, a work on site at the Contemporary Art Museum in Raleigh. It was fucking astounding. And okay, granted, I'm biased, but I'm an art guy. I'll let it in. I'll roll it around my soul, see what moves inside, and then move on or linger, whatever you need to do in front of a piece of art. I do not condescend immediately. It usually takes a bit of deliberation before I dismiss something in a condescending way or dismiss something at all. Usually I'll blame myself first and say, I guess I don't get that. But that's become less and less as I get older. You would think that would become more and more. But to see that fucking thing inside, I mean, she was down there for 2 weeks, and this was a massive space. And she did the entire bit of business, the entire painting, in all its glory, live in that space inside of like 9 days. And it was a lot of space. I mean, I've tweeted pictures of it, but if you're in it, if you're out, if you're down there in Raleigh, or in that area within 100 miles, I would say go to the Contemporary Art Museum of Raleigh and see this this piece of work, because I've never seen anything like it. And again, I'm emotionally involved with this woman, but when I got there and I sat there with it before people came in for the opening, I got a little teary-eyed, and I couldn't explain it. Obviously, I was proud of her, and obviously, I was impressed by her, but the art moves you. God damn. It's got some power to it. So now I just have to deal with the fact that this woman that I'm seeing and who is in my life, is this fucking genius, which is fine with me. Primarily because there's no way I can do what she does, so I'm not threatened at all. I'm man enough to admit that. Sometimes, you get into those situations where it's like, yeah, you're great at that, but, if I could do it. No, I can't do it. I can't do it at all, and I respect it. So that was pretty exciting. Did I mention the guest today? I did not, I don't think. Very important guest, speaking of art, actually, in a way. Peaches, who I have to be honest with you, I knew very little about. But I'd received her book. I'd talked to Kim Gordon about her. And I started poking around, looking at her work. And I got this book that, had a lot of her performance or photographs of her performances. And again, very easy to sort of be like, performance art, that's ridiculous. This is like, bad comedy, or what kind of clown bullshit is this, or whatever you're going to do. Why be a slave to your cultural expectations that are probably ingrained in you, without even your permission? Why not push them out a bit and let it in? Why not open your heart to things that you don't quite understand if it is a safe environment to do so? Art shouldn't be safe at all, but taking it in should be relatively safe. You shouldn't have to see a piece of art in a free fall without a chute. If you feel that way because of the art, then that's some good art there. But, that shouldn't be the opening of the exhibition. You have to jump out of a plane and it's the last thing you see. Look over there. You see that thing in the sky that's, blowing up and spinning around? Okay. Hope you enjoyed that. R.I.P. The point is, I was very taken with the audacity and the persistence and the strange courage of Peach's work that I saw, in print in terms of photographs of her performances. And then I listened to her music, and it was fun. It seemed to come from a place. She seemed to have a thing, but she's a very, quite a spectacle. And she does a lot of stuff with prosthetics and costumes and haircuts and penises and things and boobs. And, a lot of different stuff. So I did a little research. I poked around a bit and learned some stuff about her. And this was the most interesting thing. There's a thing I do that I'm not sure is correct. And that is, there's two things. Is dismissing people as crazy without deeply acknowledging my own particular insanity. The other thing is assuming people who are uniquely talented in an uncomfortable way are damaged, I think is wrong. I think it might be wrong to assume people are damaged just because of their profession in most cases. Again, look at yourself. You know, where are you coming from? What's your lot in life? What have you chosen to do with your life? What are the reasons? What are you hiding from? What are the emotional scars that you're trying to solve? It was one of those situations where I'm speaking directly about my guest today, Peaches, where I'm like, she's got to be out of her fucking mind. Which is a fairly conservative, frightened way to assess something you don't understand without really knowing. And you'll find in my conversation with her, I was amazed at how grounded and focused and sort of deliberate she is in you know, her path to her creativity and to her actual work. So I learned a lesson. You know, don't make assumptions, especially negative pathological assumptions about someone's psychological disposition based on their work, because you might just be projecting, and why don't you reckon with your own shit? And hopefully whatever they're producing makes you go that full route and ask those questions of yourself so you can do that. Sometimes art's supposed to do that. Wow, this is fucking nuts. Well, why is it affecting you like that? Shut up, man. Yeah, I did that the New Yorker Festival interview with Khalifa Sana, who I'd never met before. He writes for the New Yorker. He writes a lot about music and stuff. He's interviewed me before about some stuff, but he did a good job, and I want to thank everybody for coming out for that. That was a fun conversation. I like to talk. I'm always surprised that people want to see me talk in other... Sometimes I think, like, don't I talk enough? Is anyone going to come to this? Well, how could they... Why would they come see me talk more in a different context? But I'm glad you did, because something always exciting happens when I do talk. And tomorrow I will be at Princeton University in New Jersey, my friends. I will be doing a free lecture, part of their lecture series out there. That starts at 6 o'clock on Tuesday, October 6th. I will be at Princeton in the McCosh Hall, room 50. I'll be there giving a rap. You're free to come, New Jersey people. I'm going to be in the same room where Albert Einstein presented his theory of relativity. Thanks for telling me that, guy who's running the lecture. Oh, man, not a lot of pressure. I better put something together, right? I'm glad I made it out of Raleigh. Boy, that hurricane that didn't happen almost had me buying a house down there. So I didn't buy a house in Raleigh. I'm in New York. The clouds have broken. And what I was going to say is I was surprised at how relieved I was to see rain and to experience the beginning of a season, because L.A. is slowly drying out on all levels. It's fucking apocalyptic there. I'm getting to a point, people. I'm getting to a point where I'm about to run. So let's now talk to my guest back in the garage, Peaches. Her new album, Rub, is available now. And Peaches is on tour as well at the current time. Go to peachesrocks.com to see where she's going to be. Also, that lovely coffee table book I got. So this is my conversation with Peaches. Every now and then, there's a decision that's a no-brainer. And I can tell you from experience, it was a no-brainer to use stamps.com when we started using it 11 years ago. Crazy. 11 years ago. Now, more than a decade later, Stamps.com is better than ever. The Stamps.com mobile app is like having a post office in your pocket wherever you are. You can take care of things on the go, like mailing checks, sending invoices, legal documents, and more. Easily schedule package pickups through your Stamps.com dashboard. And when you need to take care of shipping, all you need is a computer and printer. Stamps.com even sends you a free scale. Make the same no-brainer decision that over 1 million other businesses have with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial,
plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code WTF.
Peaches.
Want to work hands with yes. your mullet hawk?
My mullet hawk. I'm kind of like rocking five different hairdos.
You got some. What is that? A fade.
I got a mullet. Yep.
And a mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
And tips.
Uh-huh.
Are those what those called? Are they called like blonde tips?
What frosting.
Frosting.
I think that's the old school name.
And
but,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all your real hair.
Of course.
Oh, stop it! Come on. Here's the deal with you and me.
Uh-huh.
Kim Gordon mentioned you.
Yeah.
And then you and I did some Twittering
yeah.
at each other.
Tweeting. We tweeted.
And then I'm like, all right, I got to reckon with Peaches. I got to figure out what this is all about. And then sort of I immersed myself in the music
yeah.
and the world and the book. And then there was that moment where like, where the fuck have I been for the last 15 years to like not be up to speed? But I don't, you're not that easy to find, are you?
Well, Peaches is a lot of different things, right?
Yeah, it's a world.
Yeah, I mean, but also it's a fruit.
Uh-huh.
It's a very well, popular southern name.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you know, R.I.P. Peaches Geldof.
Uh-huh.
There's, you know, just so.
Well, I mean, I was specific with my search.
Yeah.
I didn't.
No, but that comes up too.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, why Peaches?
It's actually from a Nina Simone song.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I just watched a documentary on her.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's incredible. There was a lot of
brutal.
Things I didn't know.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know that her music was banned like that heavily.
When she became very politically active?
Yeah, yeah.
And that it was a threat?
I had no idea that she, you know, I knew she was a powerful force.
Right.
But I didn't realize how much of a threat it was.
Right.
Yeah.
During that time
yeah.
where, you know, there's that weird kind of combination of mania and activism.
Oh, yes.
That she just took over the top.
Yeah.
I didn't know her stuff that well, and I certainly didn't know her story, and it was sort of heartbreaking and amazing.
Yeah.
Did you listen to her when you were a kid?
Yeah, I listened to her a lot. But that song, Four Women,
yeah.
at the end, she
yeah.
says, they call me Peaches.
And that's where you got it
so
from?
So I was like, oh, I want her to sing that to me.
I'm going to be Peaches.
She's not going to be like, they call me Meryl. So
Meryl's the real name?
Yeah.
Meryl what?
Meryl Nisker.
And it's Jewish.
It's Jewish. It doesn't sound so Jewish, does it?
Nisker. Not really. I know those SKs with the ER sometimes.
Polish.
Yeah, Polish. Yeah, I'm part Polish Jew.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we all came from
What's
the same.
What's the other part?
I think there's a lot of Polish Jew, and I think there might be some Lithuanian Jew in there, maybe. Maybe uh-huh. some Austrian Jew, because most of like the... Yeah. You too?
I think my Austrian Polish, it's kind of like melded because of, you know,
yeah.
got all...
Sure, yeah,
around.
All that Eastern European Jew stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you come from Canada?
Yeah.
So your family ended up there and mine ended up here. How'd they get to Canada?
Half my family went to New York and half went to Canada. Actually, they went to a farm in Edmonton.
Really?
Yeah. And they were like, what are we doing here? We're not farmers.
But isn't it weird how they end up there? How do Jews end up there?
I don't
never know, like, you know, what the process is.
I don't know.
But you grew, you didn't
they're
grow
wanderers,
up.
They're wanderers.
Yeah, they so, are. Yeah, you know. they're on the run is
yeah.
what they're, yeah. what part did you grow up in, though?
Toronto.
That's
Toronto.
Toronto.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Toronto. Yeah.
That's a good city.
Yeah.
It's a big city. It's a real city.
Mm-hmm. It is. It likes to think it's a real city.
Well, I mean, it is for Canadian city.
For a Canadian city, it is. You know it's a real city for Canadians because all Canadians from everywhere else hate Toronto. Oh, you're from Toronto.
Oh, the big city.
That's the corporate city.
Yeah. Oh, corporate city?
Yeah, ooh, Toronto.
But it's weird. I try to like figure out what the difference is between like a Canadian city and American cities. And it just seems to be a lack of general fear and terror in the street.
You'll just hear a lot of sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Like Canadians will bump into you and
but they're out
the other person will apologize.
Yeah. Right.
Like, oh, sorry. You bumped into me. So.
But what kind of family did you grow up in, though? Can I ask these questions?
Because yeah,
I want to know
you
how you evolved into this event. Ongoing event that is Peaches.
Like suburban Jewish.
Really? Do
kid.
You have a brother and sisters?
Yeah, I have a brother and a sister.
So it's a big little Jewish family.
Yeah.
Conservative Jews.
conservative. It's just so funny that it's conservative because we were conservative for no reason.
But it doesn't mean anything, really.
Yeah, it means tradition. It means, like, I'm still scared of my parents, and they were conservative, so we're going to be doing that, too. But
were you bar mitzvahed?
This is the sad part.
What?
Because my brother got bar mitzvahed in Israel.
Oh, the whole thing.
Like, we all went. Oh, the big, yeah. And we all got dressed up like Canadians, you know, for bar mitzvah. Uh-huh. And then it was in because my uncle lives in the Negev.
Really?
Yeah. So we went to their synagogue, and everybody else is in like shorts, and all the bar mitzvah boys are just like, yeah, another day, you know, whatever.
Right, right.
And we're all like uptight in our
dresses
outfits.
And suits. Yeah.
And then my brother had that.
Yeah.
My sister had a choice.
Right.
Either having a bat mitzvah.
Are they older?
Yeah, they're both older.
Okay.
So my sister's 3 years older.
Yeah.
She had a choice to either have a bat mitzvah or to go on a van tour across Israel with other 13-year-olds for a month.
The teen tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Just like in a van. Not even like...
Not a bus, not...
Just like a van with like 10 other kids.
Right. And she took that?
Yeah, how amazing. Right. What a great experience.
All right, so that's what they got.
Yeah.
And when it came to you?
Basement party. They were about to renovate the basement.
But you had a bat mitzvah.
No.
You didn't?
I just had a basement party. They're like, your brother's DJing.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's probably what started your whole career. That was the bitterness from the basement party.
Yeah. I went to half day Hebrew, half day English school.
Really?
Yeah. So I really was always like, why? I can't even learn English. How can I learn Hebrew too? And I was very spaced out kid.
But they were really Jewy. I mean, that's not like, you know, eventually you get to Israel once.
Yeah. No. Me and my sister both went to half day Hebrew, half day English school. She can speak Hebrew. I can't because I just spaced out. I was like, this is too much for me.
But do your parents both speak Hebrew?
No.
What's your old man do?
He's an accountant. He used to be a pro baseball player.
Really?
Yeah.
In Canada?
Yeah, he got discovered in a small park. Because, you know, like when his parents came over, you know, they'd always bring people over.
Right.
And they had no money, so everybody would live in their house.
Right.
They basically lived under the dining room table and then give away their room and everything. And one person who stayed at their house took my father, who was, they had two sons. My father was the younger one.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, kid, I'm going to show you how to pitch.
Yeah.
And he would pitch every day with my father. And then...
And your dad became a pitcher?
Yeah. He was a pitcher. And he was a pitcher at the time where you could still be a batter.
Uh-huh.
So...
And for what team?
He was like the Cleveland Indian farm team.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so he never made the majors?
No. His mother died when he was like 21.
Oh.
And he was just like, I want to go home to... My girlfriend and get married.
Uh-huh.
And then he became accountant. But he's the most contented man. He's like, no regrets. So happy. He's been with my mother since she was 14 and he was 17.
Really?
Yeah. And they love each other.
Still?
Yeah. They're in their 70s. They're so in love. It's
That's so sweet.
Yeah. It's you're just like, I'll never have that.
Why do we assume that?
I don't know. They're amazing.
We're getting up there. Like, I've been through a few.
I tried. I mean, I tried. You know, I have a good model, so I've tried, you know.
I don't know what causes the fundamental inability or the dissatisfaction or the hunger to keep, you know, to not relax into it or something. I think that it seems like there is a lot of compromise that you just have to live with.
I think, you know, I was married.
Uh-huh. For how long?
Well, I was with this person for 9 years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was 21, I was 24, we got married when I was 28.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were with him...
In Canada.
Right. Yeah. So how long were you with him before you got married?
5 years.
And what did that guy do?
He was an artist.
Painter?
He was a painter and a sculptor. He was really interested in making, like, action figures.
Uh-huh.
So he used to, like... He used me as a model. So
right.
He'd, like, stare at my face and all my moving parts. And then he made an action figure of me. With like 13 movable parts and uh-huh. a head.
And
for a year, he was just like carving it and staring at me.
What were you doing at that time?
Well, I was doing music at night and my day job doing music with children.
How did you play piano? Guitar?
Guitar. Sing? I was learning acoustic guitar.
And you were 21?
21. Okay. Yeah.
And this is like when you, well, getting back to your parents, what did your mom do?
She didn't, she
just hung out.
Hung out. But at 30, she went back to school, psychology.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Parent effectiveness training courses. And she started smoking.
Of course, because she had to be intense as a psychologist.
Yes.
The smoking kind.
Yeah.
The thoughtful, intense one.
Yeah, she is. That's exactly her.
Really?
Yeah, very, very thoughtful, intense.
And was she, did her parenting shift at 30? How old were you when she was doing that, smoking and being a psychologist?
I think I was probably like 12.
Right?
Yeah.
So was there a big shift in the approach?
No, I didn't notice. I was too spaced out.
Why are you so spaced out?
I don't know. I was just spaced out. I just like didn't understand why all these, I don't know. I just didn't understand why I had to go to this kind of school or I lived in this life. And, it wasn't more like a defiant thing. It was more like, I just don't get it.
You felt out of place?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just uncomfortable around the regular people, around the life.
I didn't even know why,
Yeah.
It wasn't like I was a loner. I had friends and everything.
But inside, you were like, I'm different than this.
No. I wasn't even like I was just spaced out.
Really?
I was just like, what's going on? Yeah.
No drug.
I mean, I was 12.
Right. Yeah. Well, it starts young. Maybe not in Canada, but here, you can get going pretty early.
Yeah, it's true. You can.
So you're doing that. You're being a spaced out kid.
Yeah.
And then when does the compulsion to create happen in general? Because, I mean, somebody that does all the things that you do, that it's hard to sort of categorize it in probably until later. But you seem to be pretty open to creativity in a big way. So was there a specific thing that kind of triggered you?
Well, I was, I memorized songs all the time, one of those kids. I was almost in an autistic fashion. Like I remember every song. I used to New Year's when I was 6, I would stay up and listen to AM radio and write down the top 100. Of that year. And it would be very important to me.
To listen to all of them and to know all of them?
To know all of them. And I'd be so excited if I knew every song or things like that. So I was really into music in my head, but I didn't know it meant anything.
Right.
And I didn't think you could be a musician if you didn't have training,
right? Yeah,
or anybody else around you that was doing it.
Who were the bands that sort of moved you early on? Was it like disco music?
Music, all of it.
Yeah.
I remember hearing Talking Heads on like a classic rock station. I'm like, this is different.
This is it.
This is like not classic rock, but it's on this station. I don't understand why, but I like it.
Like Psycho Killer or something?
Yeah,
Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
I was like, why is this here? Yeah. And also, when I was 12.
Yeah.
Usually it's always when I was 7, but it seems like today when I was 12.
12 is a big time for you. That was a pivotal year, the 12.
Yeah, well, we used to have these...
Before the basement party.
Yeah, right before, but leading up to...
Yeah.
But we used to have school dances.
Right.
This is after I went to Half to Hebrew, Half to... When I went to the public school, which is ironically called Zion Heights Junior High.
But it was not a Jewish school.
No. But we would have school dances, and they would play a lot of early hip-hop, first hip-hop songs.
Yeah.
And early funk music and disco.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was like 70...
78.
Right.
Yeah. And so there was like a large...
Music you can dance to.
Yeah. And I love to dance.
You did.
Yes. My dad and my brother made me play hockey because I'm Canadian.
You played hockey.
Yeah. And all the games were Saturday nights.
Uh-huh.
But I was invited to like bat mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs. So it was like a big problem for me.
I'm not going to play hockey.
I don't want to play hockey, Dad. I want to dance to the bat mitzvah.
How were you on the skates? Pretty good?
Horrible. Was horrible.
I wanted a hockey success story.
There's no.
What did your siblings end up doing in life?
In life now?
Yeah.
Well, my brother is a editor.
Yeah?
Yeah.
For publishing? Oh, film editor?
Yeah. And he works on TV right now.
You have two?
And I have a sister.
And what's she do?
She is living life, and she's the most beautiful person ever. She has a debilitating disease.
Mm-hmm.
She has multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. And, it's a galloping form, and she's just trying to get through the day time. But she's so positive and like the biggest inspiration of my life.
Is she in Canada?
No, she's in White Plains, New York.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And do you spend time with her whenever you can?
Yes, I try to spend a lot of time with her.
She's an inspiration because of her determination?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing when you know somebody or have somebody in your life that has to struggle with something so real and horrible, and they can still manage.
She has so much love for everybody. Because I have, like, you know, Jewish guilt.
Sure.
And also with her, because I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to Japan to play some shows. And she's like, oh, my God, you're so amazing. I can't believe, you know, like, so excited. But not in a phony way. She's just seriously excited.
Right.
Because I don't want to, like, make her feel bad or, you know.
Right, right.
But she loves it. She vicariously, you know, lives through it.
So she's excited for your success.
And yeah.
I have to, like, when I watch your stuff or when I listen to it, in terms of how it's provocative, at what point did your parents say, like, I guess she's doing good?
When they read about it in, you know, the newspaper, you know, then they're like, oh, because they're friends. Like, my mother had a harder time. My dad was like, oh, you know, we listened to Donna Summer in my car. Uh-huh. Bad Girls. I know what you're doing. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah.
And then I remember he read an article on Little Kim once, and he was like, oh, I read about Little Kim. I know what you're doing.
I know what you're up to.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so let's get back around to what provoked you creatively. Okay, so you're listening to music, but at some point you started to evolve into this, you know, performance artist / techno goddess thing. Provocateur.
Yeah.
But it didn't start out that way,
No, it's all very organic. I mean, like I said, I didn't even know what art school was. Like, I didn't know what that was.
Right.
You know, I didn't.
But you were 12.
You know, no, but also, like, even I didn't know about contemporary art or any of that stuff. No, my you know, we had like a Dali print on my wall, and
of course.
So I was like, why is that, you know, watch melting or like Don Quixote. Right. Picasso, you know, but you know, I didn't know anything about
that. So something must have blown your mind at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it was all blowing my mind. I didn't, you know, realize it. But and then there was like a big theater element. So because we'd go to visit family in New York, and then we'd go to Broadway shows and things like that.
Yeah,
and it's such a typical. There's two really typical Jewy stories.
Okay.
At my cousin's bar mitzvah when I was seven, I asked my mom if I could sing with the band.
Yeah.
And she said, can you sing? And I'm like, yeah, I think I can sing. So I sang with the band.
Uh-huh.
So, and then
did
I had
to. Did you nail it?
I nailed it, and I had to sing it at every bar mitzvah and wedding and stuff like that. So, I mean, then the secret was out. Like,
Meryl can sing.
And so every Barbra Streisand album or anything that came out was like, there's a new Barbra Streisand. Can you learn Evergreen? So, you know, I would sing all that.
And you liked learning lyrics, so it wasn't a problem.
I loved it. I remember waking up one morning and on the radio was like Barbra Streisand and Neil Diamond singing, You Don't Bring Me Flowers. I ran into my parents' room like, oh my God, they're singing together. You know?
Neil, and you knew both of them?
Yeah, well, because that's all we listened
to,
you know?
Sure.
And then my parents were like, yeah, that's cool. And I couldn't believe they weren't as excited as I was.
About Neil Diamond and Barbra Streisand?
Singing together.
So so you graduate high school?
Yeah, well, so I was very into theater because that's all I knew.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, so I was very into theater. And then we had this really special program in my high school where in grade 11, so that's a Canadian thing.
Yeah.
You guys say like...
We have it.
11th grade.
Okay. Well, so, similar though, right? You do this.
So grade 11, you
go to 12, right? Grades?
13.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So in grade 11, they split everybody into actors, and grade 12 was producers, and grade 13 was directors.
So it was a real program.
Yeah, yeah. So I got really into it, and I couldn't wait to be the director, and then...
You started as an actor.
Yeah, I had to be an actor.
And what plays, like, when you went to New York, what do you remember being like, oh my God?
I don't know, like, just like Fiddler on... Nothing. Like Fiddler on the Roof or like West Side Story.
Like
stuff
the revival
like
of Fiddler with Topol as the main guy back again?
Probably. And I think I stood up in the like aisle and was dancing, and my parents were like, sit down. Or actually, they let me.
You're like
you
a
know.
Dorky Jewish girl.
So dorky. Yeah, and then Fame, you know, my favorite movie. And then there's that girl, Doris, who's singing, like, her mom's making her sing.
Right, yeah.
She wasn't my favorite. Irene Cara was, of course.
But, yeah, yeah. So you're in 11th grade and you're acting in
shows. Acted, and then I was doing production, and I started to like fight with teachers, like, why are we doing this? But, you know, and stuff like
as
that.
As a director?
Yeah, yeah. Or as a, you know, just like.
As a student?
As a student and just like, you know, questioning things. And
right. Then the rebellion started to happen, finally.
Yeah, and then also I started to care about my subjects and writing and literature, you know, and things like that.
Right.
So I started to get into it. And then I went to theater school for university.
All of it? You finished?
No, I didn't. I actually dropped acid and went, what am I doing?
Really? You had that experience?
I really had that experience. I dropped acid and the next day I was like, I do not want to be in this program. And then I took all arts. Like I took a, you know, mixed media course.
But you stayed in school?
Yeah, yeah. I stayed in school.
And you got a degree in arts?
I got a degree, yeah.
And you did like what? All painting, drawing, sculpture?
Oh, I took a 101 visual arts class, and I was horrible. I've never life drawn in my life.
Yeah.
And the teacher would like come by and be like, she had this English accent. Yeah. She'd be like, you're stupid.
Really?
What are you doing? And yelling at me. And like, I'd be like, I don't know. It's 101 drawing. I'm trying, you know. And then I had to do a sculpture and I got scared. So I just asked my friend to do it for me.
You had
because
your friend
I was
cheat
like,
a sculpture?
Yeah. And she made me really manly with like this big chin. And, yeah. I got in trouble for that.
For your friend's chin of you?
She's just like, that doesn't look like you, you know.
So they were really sort of strict, figurative, kind of like.
It's the first half of the year. And the second half was all like.
Breakout,
like conceptual. And then I was like, I get it.
This I can
you know,
do.
And we learned about like Duchamp. And then, I don't know, you had to make a monster out of found objects. And
oh, that's the good stuff.
Yeah. And then I was like, made some blender monster and she loved it. She's like, now you're brilliant. What happened to you? You
know? Same teacher?
Yeah, yeah, same teacher. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, that was fun.
So the acid thing, what was that? How did that happen to a dorky Jewish girl? Who were you hanging out with that said, do this?
Oh, no. It was just like, you know, Monday nights we would go dancing at this place, RPM. Uh-huh. And so one night we're like, let's do acid.
And that was a tough few days.
It was just fun. No, it was just fun. I think I did only like a half. I've only done acid twice. And it was just like sparkly. And but then I just went, I am dropping out of that program. Yeah.
That's it. That was the inspiration, the life changer.
Yeah.
When did you start playing the guitar?
Probably at the end of high school. I always like dated guys who played guitar instead of playing guitar myself at first. And then I realized I'm like, it's me who wants to play guitar, not dating a guy playing guitar, you know? So.
Did you date rock guys or folk guys or?
The first one was a folk guy who played like. No, he played. It was horrible. He played. Actually, I was better friends with his brother, and then I went out with him. Mm-hmm. It was like not good.
Yeah.
But he played like Piano Man on the guitar. That's wrong.
Right.
How can you play Piano Man on guitar?
Yeah. But you like the song.
Not really. I was just like, he plays guitar. You know, I was like 15 or something.
Uh huh. And then the next guy?
He was more like into African rhythms.
The next guy was?
Yeah, yeah. He was really talented.
Yeah, what was that called? Juju pop?
Yeah, yeah, juju music. Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah.
And then the next guy?
Then the next guy was a girl who played acoustic guitar. And then I was like, yeah, we should jam together. And then she's like, I only play my own songs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, you only play your own songs. And then we ended up having a band together, which was my first band.
What was that called?
Mermaid Cafe.
And that's where it started?
Yeah, with it was like after a Joni Mitchell song.
Mm-hmm. So you were doing folk?
Yeah, we got one gig at this kind of legendary small folk club where like the Bare Naked Ladies started and like these other people. And we brought a lot of people, so he gave us a weekly gig and then we just kept writing songs. And then that's when I was playing folk music.
Uh-huh.
And then another friend joined who had taught me to play guitar.
Yeah.
Joseph Greenbaum joined. And then it was only Jewish kids coming to our shows. And I was like, I'm trying to break away from
the
scene.
Was the girl you were seeing Jewish?
She was Jewish too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so
but
funny.
She's not Jewish. Her family, they weren't very.
Right. But it didn't matter. It was just
But it's just like, you know, it's Toronto. There's like a, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Yeah. I didn't. I would not have assumed.
Jewy Louie.
Well, you make assumptions about people. Yeah. You know, I did a little research. I knew you were Jewish, but I didn't know how entrenched.
Yeah, but I broke away. Yeah.
But did you break away hostily?
No. I was just. But it was. You know, the folk band was quite popular with the
Jewish
community. Yeah, uh-huh. Actually, there's a
like older people would come out.
No, it was all like 14-year-old girls like crying to our music.
Did you say a documentary?
There's a documentary that two of those girls are doing right now about the relationship between queer culture and Jewish summer camps.
Really?
And because that's where we met, me and
this girl.
Did
you go to Jewish summer camp?
I did. I also taught drama at another camp where like the kids would go home and the counselors would stay over.
Sure. And what is the connection between queer culture and Jewish summer camp?
Nothing. That's what they're trying. And also...
Oh, they're trying to prove something? I didn't know that.
No,
that
they're not trying to prove it. And they're also Jewish culture and Jewish summer camps.
Right.
That's also like, what is the connection there?
Yeah.
And then camps and camps.
I went to camps. I went to a Jewish day camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kaitanah.
Kaitanah?
I think so. Not Kaikanah.
Kaitanah. I have a friend named Kaiki. It's very difficult
for me. A Jewish friend?
No. He's Brazilian. And I'm always like,
Kaiki?
I don't want to call you that. I feel weird calling you that.
But isn't that weird, though? There is this weird connection that I think Jews feel. And I haven't talked about it in a while. But there's a familiarity there. That you know, when you walk into a room full of Jews, you're like, I get it. You know,
yeah.
And even I imagine that's the same in Canada.
You know, Yeah.
There's just this thing that we... It's a weird kind of... Well, the exceptionalism. You're sort of brought up as a Jew to believe the Jews are like insanely special.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there you are with a bunch of Jews singing songs.
Great. But what is there? But there's no Jewish culture involved in these summer camps. It's just hanging.
No, really? Yeah. No. Singing? No.
No.
None?
There was none in the ones I went to.
I think maybe it was just a plan to keep us marrying each other.
This is what they were talking about.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Queer girls. Yeah. They're just like, and then what were we supposed to do being queer?
Right.
And then Mermaid Cafe, our big song that people would come and cry to,
right,
was about two young boys who were in love and the mother catches them in bed and one of the boys runs out of the house and gets on his motorcycle and drives away and gets hit by a bus, you know? So
really?
So dramatic.
Yeah. That was your big song?
Yeah.
Who wrote that one?
Andy D, the other girl.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And did...
She rode a motorcycle. It was kind of about her.
Uh-huh.
But not the part getting hit.
But you didn't want to make it girls?
No, she made it about boys. I don't know why. It was just...
But was that the first sort of time you started to kind of push the envelope a little bit and present that life?
I don't think I even thought about it as pushing the envelope.
No, but I mean, like, how was it being received about, you know, having a song, a relationship about two boys who were in love with each other?
That was like totally the song.
Oh, really?
And I was like, all the Jewish kids in the, you know, heteronormative community, they loved it. It was like, they were also like, Andy and Meryl are sleeping together.
Yeah.
There was also that.
Oh,
right?
So the gossip was there.
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
Heteronormative. That's the word. That's the that's the classification.
Heteronormative.
I've never heard that before.
Really?
I like it. No, I mean, I'm not up to speed on the classifications.
Yeah, well,
of us all.
It's not really, yeah. I guess it's not really.
I guess I'm kind of heteronormative. I'm okay with it.
Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks. So how do you get from playing in a folk duo to Fancy Pants Hoodlum? How does that happen?
Because I didn't want to play folk music anymore. So I just started experimenting around. So
with what?
With other musicians.
Yeah.
With like jazzers or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and just like using my voice more. You know, I love Nina Hagen or, you know.
Uh-huh.
Diamanda Galas and just like, ooh.
Diamanda Galas, that was heavy shit, man.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Do you know her?
I do know her. Yeah, she's a really sweet, beautiful person. Yeah.
I remember when that was, when was those first couple records were huge for a while.
Oh, the one with like John Paul,
Jones. Yeah.
That was 90s, a while. Early 90s, yeah.
So you started to get into that. Did you sort of shift peer groups?
I mean, I was, even before like Mermaid Cafe, I was already living downtown Toronto with like, you know, different friends who I met at university and stuff like that. So dancers and musicians,
right?
And, you know,
yeah.
Who weren't Jewish?
Who weren't Jewish? And now, how are your parents like handling all this?
No, they're fine with that. It was all good because I was still in Toronto.
But wasn't there the fear like she's going to be an artist?
Oh, no. They didn't care about that. No, they had a problem with, you know, with me dating a woman.
They did.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I, you know, stopped living at home.
What'd they say? What was their approach?
It was just like, are you gay?
Yeah.
And I was like kind of laughing like, oh my God, my parents are asking me if I'm gay. I don't even know. It's like, I like people.
Yeah.
You know.
And did they kick you out?
It was funny. Yeah, it was funny because I think my dad was like trying to be angry.
Uh-huh.
In my mind, I was like, he's not really angry. But my mother was.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's come a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, she was very open and liberal, but still, you know, when it's your own child, it's quite different, so.
That's sort of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
I know it's a bad word, but I mean,
yeah,
it's
just... Yeah, no, but it's appropriate.
Yeah, but how did she reconcile that? I mean, and she was the one that reacted. Is it out of fear? Or do they think that, your life is going to be so difficult?
That's what it is, also. I think she's just... worried that, you know, it's the 1950s
right.
still, and that life is going to be so difficult if you have an interracial marriage or, right.
People
you know,
are going to judge you.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
never going to be able to go outside.
Yeah, yeah, things like that. So
it's weird about parents, especially open-minded ones, when people get into the arts or have sexual preferences that they don't agree with, you know, their anger is really this weird concern.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how are you going to exist?
Yeah, it's like, I couldn't deal with that if that was me, you know, also.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And how did she eventually come around the smoking psychologist?
The smoking psychologist, she'll never like that girl.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, she'll never like her.
That one girl.
Yeah, she'll never like that girl.
Because she sees that girl as the one that did it?
Yeah, I don't know. So whatever, it's fine.
Yeah. It's to this day,
yeah.
She's not gonna.
Yeah,
like that.
Even like if I play shows in Toronto and if Andy comes, in, my mother's still a bit like, "Hello, Andy. Hello." It's fun. It's fun for me. I'm always like, "Andy's here." Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So when did it? Because I mean, like when I was listening to the music and filling my head with Peaches material. Which I do, and I don't always know.
You're like rubbing your head while you're saying this and closing your eyes. I'm like, was it all right for you?
No, it's great. It was great. But like I started to realize that, you know, probably seeing you live and experiencing, you know, what you do on stage and how it sort of is put together there. I mean, the music's great, but it seems like a lot of the stuff is a visual experience. I mean, even the videos, you know, the album covers, but then, you know, the few live things that I was able to see, it seems like it's half, if not more, of the experience of what you do is the visual element.
Yeah, it could be for some people. For other people, they don't even know my name, but they know songs like Fuck the Pain Away or Boys Wanna Be Here.
Sure.
You know, without knowing me.
Right.
Like, I've met people, you know, like kids, and they're like, so what do you do? I'm like, oh, you know, I'm an artist, I'm Peaches. And they're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What are you singing? And I'm like, electro music. And they're like, oh, yeah. I'm like, you know that song, Fuck the Pain Away? They're like, Fuck the Pain Away. That's my jam.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's me. And they're like, what? You know, that I love that moment. Because to me, that's even the music transcending any image, any message, any, you know.
Right.
So that's exciting for me. Or when it's used on certain shows like South Park or
right.
30
yeah, yeah,
Rock.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm just like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's like beyond... anything that I have to, you know,
right. So
feed.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It exists without you and will exist without you forever.
Yeah.
And it's just out there and people have a relationship with it.
Yeah.
That was a hit?
Fuck the Pain yeah. Away? It was, but not, of course, it was never radio
it was
or anything.
Hard to be played.
Yeah, but everybody knew it. This was like just before, you know, internet was...
Right.
Yeah. Just, so it was like 2000.
Just missed the cut, just barely?
No. Yeah, but which was great because... Yeah. I was getting, you know, attention from a lot of huge artists, like loving this song and everything. And also, yeah, just it was going around. And people are always like, oh, yeah, that was my, you know, I've conceived that album. I've given birth to that album.
That's my high school song.
I came
song.
Out to the song. That's my high school song. That's, you know,
yeah, yeah.
So many stories. Yeah.
What's a powerful message?
Yeah. What's actually a breakup song?
Well, yeah.
Obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah.
How are you going to get rid of heartbreak? You got to fuck your way through it.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Does that work? Not always. It doesn't always work.
It was fun.
It was fun.
It was fun at the time.
You feel like the tricky thing about fucking the pain away is that, you know, then all of a sudden at the end of your, you know, your self-therapy of fucking pain away, you're like, oh my God, I think I'm tired. Yeah, I fucked my heart numb. I don't know.
I'm tired now.
Yeah. But the
you hope maybe something will come out, you know, like you're just trying to be yourself again,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
And then maybe something, you know, something will stick. You know that theory of like, I'm not going to think about it. And then
who was the breakup
happen.
With? What's her name?
No. It was with my ex-husband.
Ugh, the 8-year guy.
Yeah.
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 So you went from the folky relationship with what's her name? I want to know her name.
Andy D.
Just to irritate your mom. So Andy D. would you consider her the first love of your life?
No. Robert Morton was the first love of my life.
So you met when it's a high school relationship.
Yeah.
And then the husband's name?
Jordan Sonnenberg.
Wow, you really kept in the tribe.
Yeah. Jordan, he was not into being Jewish at all.
Except for his name.
Yeah.
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 And he was an artist.
He was an artist. He made incredible things. He also made a model of himself with a big claw and a big heart on. Like, I would really like to, you know, relieve myself, but I can't because I have a big claw for a hand.
So that was he like? He sounds
Does that
like
mean
he,
I was bad in bed? I just was no, like, oh wait.
No, it means he's got some problems.
Yes, so he had a lot of issues to work out. So,
but was that an inspiration to you? It sounds like your reverence for the dude in terms of how he conceived of things visually was pretty high.
Yeah, he also was like a wealth of knowledge for like you know, visual arts, and he went to art school. He'd be reading about something and be like, "What's that?" He'd be like, I'm reading a book about the Situationists. I'm like, who are they? And then he'd roll his eyes. So
right,
like,
that relationship. Okay.
Well, because you know that movie with Bernadette Peters, Slaves of New York?
Yeah, yeah.
And the boy, you remember their relationship? And
not really.
And then he's like, what is it I hate about you most?
Uh-huh.
We used to say that to each other.
Oh, that was the
tagline?
Yeah,
and that's kind of like.
You kind of picked it up?
It's kind of right.
Yeah?
Yeah. How we were just like, there was like a negative kind of thing.
Sounds like true love.
Yeah, it was true love. So we broke up.
But you got married first.
We got married. We were like, yeah, it was my idea.
Was it ironic or was it?
I was like, let's get married. Maybe we can move to the States. Maybe it'll be easier. We'll get green cards, you know. We love each other, but it was more like, let's get married. Okay.
You weren't thinking about having a family?
No.
No, just getting
married.
He
has a family now.
He does?
Yeah.
He leveled off? Is he still an artist?
He's still an artist. Well,
that's good.
Yeah.
He hung in there.
Yeah.
But when did you start to put together this very versatile stage persona where you kind of found your groove? I know it happens organically, but at some point you knew you were going to, you know, challenge assumptions.
Well, I guess after, you know, Fancy Pants Hoodlum was fun for me, but I didn't really have an audience.
Right.
I was asked by a friend's band, Spin the Susan, you know, like a Lazy Susan. That was the name of their band. And they were very much like a Beyond the Valley of the Dolls kind of band.
In the way they were presented themselves on stage?
And the music.
Okay.
And there were two girls in that band, and I was like, girls making music, awesome. So we played together, and then one of the girls I wanted to start a band with, and I was like, I want a girl band. Let's have a girl band together. And she said, well, my next door neighbor, he's a guy, and he has like instruments in his basement. Let's just go over there and jam. And there's this other guy I have a crush on. Let's just get together. I'm like, girl band, no. But she's like, just come. So I met these two guys. I didn't even meet them.
Yeah.
We just basically, we all smoked a joint, and then we started jamming, and then we started writing songs about each other without knowing each other, like with sexual innuendos. And it was crazy. And then we just kept switching instruments, which I'd never done in my life. All of a sudden, they're like, play the drums. And I'm playing drums. And then I'm playing keyboards, which in my mind was like, rock and roll does not have keyboards.
Right.
You know, I was like, that is like number one.
You were a purist.
Yeah,
I was. No synthesizers.
And now I'm so like, synthesize. Yeah, it's like, that was the moment I got on the synthesizer and, you know.
On a Roland?
No, it wasn't the groove box.
That's no.
It, but it was like a Moog. Uh-huh. Moog.
Like
Moog.
The real, like.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like. Moog. Yeah. And so after that, we all hung out. It was like Maki, who's a really good, awesome musician. Maybe you know him. And Chili Gonzalez. after that practice,
yeah,
we got together. We all gave each other names. That's where I gave myself Peaches, and we called ourselves the Shit.
Yeah.
And we're like, we're the Shit. And because we were all dissatisfied with our music, and actually we became pretty popular, and just in terms of, you could tell audience liked it and we were enjoying it. It was kind of like art rock and really sexual. So that's kind of where the seeds of it all came. With
sexual
the Shit.
In just the musical content, not the performance necessarily.
Yeah, no, we weren't like rubbing against each other. We were mostly screaming. In my mind, we were like Pussy Galore, the
okay,
band Pussy
sure.
Galore. That was my favorite.
But it was rock. In your
but
mind.
it was rock. Oh yeah,
yeah
but
yeah.
It was arty, you
right,
know, with
sure.
keyboards and stuff.
Were you into Sonic Youth? Were you into
yeah.
art rock bands?
Yeah, I mean that's what happened. Mermaid Cafe was like 1989, 1990, and
right.
then I heard like Pavement and
Pavement.
you know Sonic Youth
yeah.
and Bong Water. I was really into Bong Water.
She's great. I can see that influence, Magnuson.
Mm.
I can see that a lot in the way you construct songs. Like, they're kind of funny, and they got
yeah,
big turns of phrase.
Yeah, she was really funny.
Yeah, and Kramer was sort of a mastermind for a while.
Yeah.
But Sonic Youth, too, they were a big influence.
I loved Kim Gordon, and I loved Pussy Galore.
And what about Suicide?
Band Suicide.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because...
not the idea.
I always say, and I'm very influenced by Suicide. And then I'm like, God, some people don't know what you're saying. You have to say the band.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know?
I just got turned on to them. I miss fucking everything.
Okay, well, wait. I miss them too. Because, so after the Shit, everybody moved away.
Yeah.
And that's when I got the Rolling Groove Box. And I was like, I'm going to make a band anyway. And it's going to just
by
be
myself.
Me.
Yeah.
yeah. And that's where I thought I was being rock and roll. And then all of a sudden it was kind of an electro.
And that was, that became?
Teaches of Peaches.
The big one.
Yeah. That was my first album. Yeah.
So it is sort of an organic evolution.
Very
you're with
organic.
All these art rock people and you're
yeah.
doing this weird shit. And then you're like, fuck it. I need more freedom.
Yeah.
I need more point of view. And you got that Roland, what is it? MC-505.
Yeah.
And you're like, I can do it all.
Yeah, and I was like recording on an ADAT machine.
So what are you going to say about Suicide?
Well, then I was playing a gig.
Yeah.
And
by yourself?
Yeah, by myself.
Uh-huh.
It was actually a folk night, but I was playing the
yeah.
keyboard. And it was
so you just start with a beat, and then people be like, what's happening?
Yeah, and they'd be like, what is this? I don't, it's one person, so it's kind of, is this folk? I don't.
Like, yeah, yeah.
But, and then my friend... He had this band, Do Make Say Think. I don't know if you know. He's like, you need this. And he put Suicide, the band's album.
The first album.
Yeah, under my arm. He's like, you sound like this. Yeah.
yeah.
And then somebody else in another gig did that with ESG. Do you know that band,
no.
ESG? There's like these girls from Brooklyn in the 80s. No, the Bronx, sorry.
Yeah.
And their mom didn't want them to be part of gangs, so she got them all instruments.
Uh-huh.
And they became this great band.
Oh, really?
You probably know some of their music, but they're, yeah.
I'm lacking. Is it, what kind of music is it?
I don't know. It's its own thing.
Really?
It's just like, the only boy in the band, I think his name was Tito.
Yeah.
He's like playing kind of a bit of conga, and
yeah.
there's drums and bass and very like simplified but really good, and well, just a singer. I don't know.
When I heard Suicide, I was like, what the fuck?
I know, that's really good.
And then like I went and looked up a video of Vega singing, and I'm like, what is that?
Yeah, I got to sing with them.
You did?
Yeah, Frankie Teardrops.
You did?
Yeah, they're like, please just come on up and sing with them. I was like jumping on them, and it was so fun. I was just like, this is our dream. Yeah.
And when did that happen? Later.
Later, like after.
All right, so you put together Teaches of Peaches by yourself, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I just, in my room, I was like, fuck the pain away.
Yeah.
The recording of it
yeah.
was from a cassette off a soundboard the first time I ever played it.
Right.
In a club for like 20 people.
Uh-huh.
And the sound girl, I think her name was Marlon, she's like, oh, I made a cassette of your set. If you give me $5, you can have it.
Right.
And I was like, borrowed $5. And
yeah,
I
yeah.
took it and then put that song on a demo,
uh-huh.
you know, as a demo.
Yeah.
And then, you know, recorded a few other, and people heard that song, and I thought I would get feedback, and it was like, this song's awesome, like, it's great. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
don't, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix.
Sure.
So I never recorded that song, and that's the...
That was the recording?
Yeah.
That sound girl made?
Well, yeah, she just recorded it. I was doing it live.
And she did it through the board?
No, she just taped it off the board, but I was doing all the sound in the machine on stage.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Mixing it and making up the words.
And that's the version that's
yes.
on the record?
And then,
that's
yeah.
the one that became the
that's
big...
That's my lifeline.
That's amazing. So
I love that.
So that the big hit, the one that everyone knows you for in a yeah. way, is just something that happened live and in the moment?
Yeah.
That's got to be a point of pride.
Yeah.
That's fucking
cool.
awesome.
Because I didn't even realize it because I put it on the demo hoping for like... Oh, I think that guy makes electronic music. I'm going to ask him what he thinks.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. So how'd the record deal come about?
It wasn't really a record deal. I mean, I went with Chilly Gonzalez.
Yeah.
He had these like two CD players.
What's his real name?
His real name's Jason.
Yeah.
But he had two CD players.
Uh-huh.
And you could plug it into a system.
Right.
And I had my Roland Groove box and we went to Europe. We're like, let's go to Amsterdam and smoke weed. That's all we wanted to do.
Right.
And he's like, but he had a place in Paris through friends.
Uh-huh.
And then we met somebody else in Berlin. So we went there too. Like
yeah.
it was just by chance.
Yeah.
And we would be like, we have machines. You can plug them into your stereo system and we could play music in your bar. You know, this is before laptops
right,
and everything.
Sure.
Now it's like, oh yeah, just plug
no
in
problem,
over there,
yeah.
like everybody with their phone and, you know.
This was a more sort of organic techno experience.
Yeah, and it was like 1998.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we got to Berlin and we met some girl named Magda and she was like, we were telling her, oh, what we do? And she's like, you should go to this place, Gallery Berlin Tokyo, which was just some weird underground art space.
Yeah.
And we went there and... There was a guy from a very small label there, and he's like, oh, I'm interested in what you guys are doing. We didn't even sing. We were just playing, like, experimental music.
Just the two of you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I had to go back home. I had commitments. And then I was like, I'm going to move to Berlin. Should be fun or whatever. And then I made Teachers of Peaches in Toronto during that time.
So this is post-wall Berlin. This is open
yeah,
city
yeah,
Berlin.
It's, yeah, 1999
yeah.
and stuff.
Later. So 10 years later. So... What was the scene like there? Because I've talked to people who were there early on when it was dark.
Mm-hmm.
And like, who did I talk to? Like Nick Cave and those people that, you know, gravitated yeah. towards the energy. But was it still pretty vital? I mean, was it still like...
It was incredible. You like climb through windows to get into like parties where there's like five people partying all night long.
Yeah.
And but like having the best time of their life, you know?
But what was the art scene like? Did you see anything that
yeah.
was starting to kind of feed into what you were doing?
There was a group, the Honeysuckle Collective, and
uh-huh.
they were just making videos and
yeah.
doing performances and things like that.
Were you considering yourself a performance artist?
No, actually, I wasn't.
You do get labeled that?
I did get labeled that. Well, I remember like when I played my, because people weren't used to also just like a machine.
Right.
You know, they were used to people with a machine looking down, pretending
right.
that it was rocket science.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So I was like, fuck that. I'm going to like put a rock and roll energy. I'm going to like perform with what I have, like Iggy Pop style, you know,
yeah.
that's my, you know, thing. But I'm going to play electronics. So it's going to confuse people. It's going to confuse people that I'm a girl in like little pink shorts and you see my pubic hairs and I'm aggressive, but I'm seeing these sex things really positive. So I was just like, let's go. Like,
yeah.
And people were just freaked out about it. And, you know, they saw it as art or punk rockers loved it. Like a lot of the...
Because it was different.
Yeah. And a lot of the Berliner punk rock people started their own like, you know, electro
uh-huh.
one person bands after that.
You planted the seed.
Yeah. It was pretty... But there was also like... Atari Teenage Riot, which was, you know, more of a digital hardcore scene, which came right before what I was doing,
uh-huh.
which was like more like angry version.
Right.
You know, and I was like, let's have fun with it more.
So you
know?
You're not driven by any anger?
No, there's definitely, you know, anger and stuff, but it's playful.
Right.
Yeah.
So was Iggy a big influence on what you wanted to do on stage?
Yeah, but even more like raw power, all the riffage.
Yeah, yeah,
I wanted to get that into electronics, which is AKA
right.
Suicide, the band.
Sure.
But I didn't know who they were.
Right.
So yeah, and then of course my dreams came true when I met Iggy Pop at some award show where I just ran in and was like, "Hey, Iggy," and I don't know, he was in some kind of great mood and I said to you, I love you, and then he held my hand and we were just kind of looking at each other like, yeah man, thanks. And his girlfriend was there and she's like, hey, this is Peaches, she's the shit. And he's like, oh cool. And I was like, where do you live? And he's Miami. And I'm like, oh, I'm playing there next week, want to come? So when I played in Miami, my guest list was Iggy Pop plus one.
Yeah.
And he showed up.
Oh, that's amazing.
So he always gives me time.
Oh, you know, really?
Like if I see him,
he'll hang out. Like,
yeah, he'll he's usually eating a steak and drinking one glass of red wine, you know.
He's but, very, you know, it's very lucid. You know, you make assumptions about those guys.
No, he's
it's all still in there. His memory is
so smart.
Clear as a bell, and he's a real thinker.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, it was really like surprising to me, you know, to have him sitting here and just lock in. Like Rollins once said, there's sort of this weird difference between Jim and Iggy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you talk to Jim, you're going to get a very sophisticated, thoughtful guy. And then when he becomes Iggy, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, he's like, fuck all that, man.
Yeah, it's very defined difference.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you start, you know, integrating, you know, spandex and cocks and hair?
Well, multiple boobs. Well, this is the thing. Like when I started playing, I got a really cheap pink bathing suit because I'm like, I should wear something girly because I was mentioning I was being so aggressive on stage, and people started to point at my bathing suit shorts because they would see pubic hairs,
right?
And I was like, oh my god, they're like freaked out that they see a few pubic hairs. This is amazing.
Yeah, right.
You know, and the album cover is a picture
of that pink.
Which is from a live show,
right?
And then I started to make like crotch galleries and things like that because people would be taking pictures of my crotch because they couldn't believe it
that there was pubic hairs coming out.
Yeah,
it was just that was so
weird,
challenging.
Yeah, challenging.
Because like, it kind of I guess the idea is that it undermines the sexual excitement of the shorts.
Yes,
so like,
the heteronormative
interpretation of what those shorts mean.
Exactly.
It's like, that's not clean. There's hair coming out of
it.
So
and I would play on that in armpit hair and stuff like that, which is
liked doing that, challenging this heteronormative.
Well, I was just lazy. I don't know. Shaving.
It?
Yeah, I really don't want to shave there all the time.
No, I know. But you knew that you were onto something.
Yeah, but I was like, oh, that's fine. Let's just do that. Yeah.
But then you decided to keep upping the ante a little bit. A little bit performance-wise.
Well,
once you realize that people are like, what?
Yeah, no, it just keep people were playing into it too. They were making me costumes like that. That you talked about this multiple boob costume with the Barbie heads that I had.
Yeah,
that was made by one of my dancers. She just presented. She's like, I made you this.
Well, the woman I'm seeing is a painter, and she turned me on to Louise Bourgeois.
Oh yes,
today.
She's amazing, and she has like one of those multiple boob.
Right, yeah. But she also does all kinds of all those interesting sculptures that are kind of claws, kind of clits, kind of cocks, and you're like, what? And then spiders, and like, what?
She's incredible, yeah.
It's kind of mind-blowing along that front of provoking heteronormative culture.
Yes.
I'm getting it.
Yes.
Give me some other classifications. But at some point, you must have realized that there was a following accumulating around, you know, what you were doing with, you know, sort of turning gender stuff inside out and pushing those buttons.
Yeah, I mean, I really was speaking about it sincerely. I wasn't like trying to like think about, you know, kind of happening.
It wasn't an activist movement.
Yeah, no, I was just, you know, yeah.
And then there's comedy to it.
Yeah, there's comedy because that's the best way to let people know what you're thinking, you know.
Right.
It's like, that's the way you get through to people.
Yeah.
They laugh and then it goes in deeper.
Sure.
You know, so.
And when you do something as big as some of the outfits you wear and some of the effects that you have, and if you've got a dildo on somehow, that it is hilarious, but it's also sort of like, what the fuck?
Yeah. The dildo is funny because right before I moved from Toronto
to Berlin?
Yeah. I was seeing this girl who was a leather maker.
Uh-huh.
And she made me my first red leather shorts.
Uh-huh.
And she made me two leather dildos.
They were leather dildos?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And those ones weren't used. Those were more for show.
Yeah.
So I gave them to my two dancers.
Uh-huh.
And they wore them. I mean, I wore them. I wore it. I wore it on face mask. I didn't even think it was controversial because I just.
Well, I don't know if it's controversial. It's just provocative.
I don't know. I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Why not?
And I almost got arrested actually when I opened for Queens of the Stone Age at the Palladium.
Really?
Because I was wearing that dildo because I have a song, Shake Your Dicks.
Yeah.
So me and my, you know, gal pal sidekick Mignon, we're both wearing them and singing Shake Your Dicks. And then after there was like a whole team of people thinking about, you know, should we call the police? Is this indecent exposure?
It isn't. They're prosthetics.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not real dicks.
Yeah. So, but it was amazing to me that there was even a discussion
about
it.
But the law enforcement is like, I don't know if this counts if they're not real cocks.
Yeah, yeah. I would have, yeah. Yeah, that conversation would have been good.
That would have been real good.
Yeah.
So, but between Teachers of Peaches and the next album, there's a lot of years.
3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fatherfucker, the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. And what were you doing?
Well, I always made an album and then toured for 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
And when you toured, did you do roughly the same stage show, same costumes? Like, did you get, like, was there a show that you hit every time? Because you had dancers and everything, right? Yeah,
not Teachers of Peaches was just me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd go through the machine and then sometimes just playback. And it was a lot about interplay between the audience. And
right.
By the end of the show, I'd be always like, I don't know. I remember one show, like, being on someone's shoulders, eating a hot dog in the middle of the audience. People are just dancing around and stuff like that, you know.
But you never got into drugs?
Not for work.
Yeah.
No, I did cocaine once before a show, and there's footage.
Oh, really?
I'm just like, if I'm already, I'm just jumping and sweating. It's not good. It's not cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I'm not, I'm a marijuana person.
Sure.
Yeah.
But do you ever think, like, you've clearly had a profound influence on a lot of other artists, and how do you register that? I mean, do you look at people like Lady Gaga or other people that are taking the type of kind of humorous, like it seems to me that you planted a seed of something that she is aware of.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Do you know her?
No, I don't know her.
How do you feel about her?
I mean, what she does is quite different because she's taken the greatest influences of the last 30 years and put them all into her show.
Meaning Madonna and
Grace Jones,
sure.
Rosine Murphy.
So you think she's real aware of what she's appropriating?
She's very, you know, she knows all that for sure.
Yeah.
And,
so you see yourself as a different type of performer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just organically doing this thing and it happened or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, I'm not mad at being, like, part of this, you know, like, let's look at an iconic history and build Gaga. Like, Grace Jones, Madonna, Peaches. I'm like, yes.
Okay.
Elton John, okay, cool. I'll be in that gang. Thank you.
But I guess what I'm asking as a person that has spent a lot of time in my past, you know, judging myself against others, are you happy with where your career is as you are?
Yes. I am so happy I'm not
huge.
I'm so happy I'm not Lady Gaga.
Right.
You know, it's not my goal. Right now it's even such a good time, like with this new album.
In the book,
yeah. With the new album Rub, now I'm doing interviews and people are like, "You're important." Things that you said happened.
Like what?
Well, because I was always like, I'm not moving towards the mainstream. The mainstream has to move towards me, you know, with like gender issues and like gay rights and blah, 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 blah.
Now, how do you feel about, you know, obviously the pressure on someone like Gaga to sort of maintain whatever the hell she's doing at the level she's doing at, and then to take the sort of weird courage to change things up and do interesting things becomes a pressure. But do you find you've been put in the position as an example or a role model or a spokesperson for gender issues?
Sometimes, yeah.
But that's cool.
Yeah, I'll say whatever I need to say about it. And if I can't, you know, I'm not an authority. I'm, you know.
Yeah. Do people come up to you and go, "You changed my life. I was locked up in a small town and I didn't think I could get out."
Constantly hear that. It's incredible.
Uh-huh.
It's incredible.
And what kind of people usually are influenced? Like people that didn't think they had a way to express who they were?
Or coming out or musicians or feeling like they had to be. Just feeling. My whole thing is like I want people to feel comfortable in their own skin.
Right.
Whichever way that is.
Right.
And that's the most important thing you can do for yourself.
But it's interesting because your journey doesn't seem to involve trauma and involve, like, you know, any real sort of restriction that, you know, you sort of kind of came to it with a certain freedom of mind that wasn't sort of like, you know, I'm going to, you know, fuck all this.
And, yeah. You know. It's funny because I think about that because people are always like, yeah, and then, you know, yeah. had this horrible relationship. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah, no, it's like it's nice. People are like, oh, she's actually nice. Like, there's afraid to meet me.
Well, you make an album called Fatherfucker, and people are like,
oh, my dad loved that title. He thought it was brilliant.
He did?
Yeah. He was like, I totally, you know, it was, well, because it's all based on like, motherfucker this, motherfucker that. So it's like
a joke. It's a turn on a phrase.
That's what it is.
Right,
it's
right.
just like, what if we said fatherfucker all the time? Like, oh, no, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he got the joke and he was.
Yeah, he loved it. He was like, your beard looks so cute on the cover.
So they've really embraced your success. And
yeah, my dad cries at shows. Like, you know, I'm sitting there like whipping my pants around my head and like doing somersaults. And he's like,
that's my baby.
Yeah, yeah. He loves it. But then they constantly, even now more than ever, my mom's like, we're so proud of you. And you're doing really important, wonderful things. But the thing we love most is that you're a good person.
That's
really sweet.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's because it's weird culturally, me being a representative heteronormative, that you.
I think you're overusing the word. No.
I'm gonna put it on a sign.
Milk it.
No, but I, you know, to classify in terms of our assumptions about like what you do. So like there's always going to be this sort of like, oh, she must be fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's just not the case.
Yeah.
And I think that's an amazing thing, and it gives you a sort of power to come from a place of fun. And really creatively embracing all these possibilities comedically and otherwise, and challenging from a place that isn't sort of like, you know, has an axe to grind.
Yeah. Some sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
I just want people to feel comfortable in their body, I swear.
No matter what.
I swear.
No matter what.
Yeah.
Just feel comfortable in your body. Life's too short.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might as well be whole.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that what we try and do our whole lives?
I don't fucking know what we're trying to do.
Yeah. You're trying to find out who you are. You know,
that's right.
That's it.
That's right.
And that's being comfortable in your own body, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then there's, you know, religion and politics that tell you you have to be this way, and mainstream this way. And that's where, you know, all the problems start, and all the hidden secrets, and all the Republicans going on the, you know, affair sites. And then you find out the truth. And,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, so
what repression causes.
Yeah.
And
so,
what fear
yeah.
causes.
Yeah, exactly. It's all why are we giving into the repression and the fear?
Right.
And it's not like, yeah, let's just fuck everybody all the time. Yeah. You know, I have like my standards and I have my, but I just, you know, really, really honor yourself that way.
And when you did Impeach My Bush, that record, was that, obviously there's a political statement in the title, but other than that, the one tune,
mm-hmm.
did you see it as a political record?
I see each album like now, in retrospect. I see Teaches of Peaches as a masturbation album in a very positive sense.
Uh-huh.
I see Fatherfucker as a role playing.
Uh-huh.
I see Impeach My Bush as a call to revolution.
Uh-huh.
And then I Feel Cream is exploring my vulnerable side.
Yeah.
And Rub, which is my new album.
Return to masturbation?
Yeah, return to masturbation. Always return to masturbation. Exactly.
Come
nicely,
full circle.
But, yeah.
But the one I Feel Cream,
mm-hmm.
and it, your vulnerable side, in what way? When you were putting that album together, were you thinking, like, I'm a grown person and now I have the I'm grounded enough to do this other thing?
I think it was I decided to collaborate with people.
Yeah.
Like I was like, I'm just going to collaborate with these people that I want to work with.
Which is vulnerable,
right. Exactly. And then some of the songs became very vulnerable. And also I'm always like, I'm challenging myself, you know, like,
sure.
So why don't you challenge yourself to also use that side, the vulnerable side.
How'd it feel?
It was great.
Yeah?
It was great, yeah.
And what is Rub? What is it? It's just, what do you
Rub, shoot? It just sounds good. It's lazy.
No,
it's like, you know.
The music, though, is different?
It's very classic me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Classic good. Peaches?
Yeah, songs like Dick in the Air.
Mm-hmm.
Song called Rub, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And in
terms of making dance music, that's a whole other world in itself.
Hey, what is dance music? It's, I don't really.
No, but techno gets this reputation.
I'm not techno. Yeah. No, for techno people, they'd be like, ha, ha.
Right, right.
Kindergarten. You know, you have to say it in a German accent. It's Kindergarten music. No. It's nice, but I wouldn't say it's techno. Like, I mean, there's a place in Berlin called Berghain.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard of this place. It's like the Mecca for techno.
Yeah.
And everybody goes there. You go there on a Thursday and leave on a Monday morning. And everybody's just naked and the music's like, it's like a crazy.
Yeah.
Movie.
Maybe I'm thinking electronic dance music. How's that? Is that better?
Like EDM?
Yeah, is that?
That's what it's called. Yeah. No, that's like, yeah, it's.
But you do make music.
I do electro. I call it electro. I don't even know what to call it. Because
no, but
I
it
don't
is like,
like,
it is sort of like music that can transcend, you know, boundaries because of the beat. Like I noticed.
Okay,
that,
that's a good way to put it.
That there is certain music that has a sort of international feel because it's catchy.
Right.
And it is danceable. Mm-hmm. And it can go on for, anywhere from 4 to 1 hour,
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what culture is listening to it, they're going to have the same reaction. They're going to be like, yeah, I'm dancing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But and then I'm putting these lyrics in, so they're dancing, then they're going,
yeah.
I'm singing along. What am I singing along to?
I just said that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, okay, the other question I have, what was this Jesus Christ Superstar business?
Are you a fan of that musical?
Yeah, I am actually.
Yeah,
I saw it when I was younger. I saw the movie.
Yeah.
There are certain parts of it I can't ever get out of my head.
And which parts?
Love them. Well, I like King Herod's song.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought it was, great. You know, so you are the Christ, y'all. And
so gay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So good.
And I liked, what's the Mary Magdalene song?
Yvonne Elman, who is like, her and Irene Cara, they are my favorite.
Right.
I think Yvonne,
I don't know how to love him. Is that it? Yeah.
Yvonne Elman's voice, and she was also a Saturday Night Fever. She wasn't in it, but she sang like, if I can't have you, I don't want.
Oh, you know.
But her voice is just so creamy and beautiful.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So you did the musical.
Yeah, well, because, people our age know it more as a rock album, I think.
Sure.
And so I wanted to honor it as that, like more than like, let's put a big production, and everything. So I wanted to sing all the parts, which I think a lot of people our generation probably sat in their room and sang along to.
Oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's what I wanted to do.
You had that double album.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to do in front of people because I was like, I think I can sing all this.
And you did it.
Yeah.
Where?
Well, I had 2 runs in Berlin, and then I did it in L.A., I did it in San Francisco, in Toronto, in Chicago, other places.
So you toured with it, well-received?
Yeah, yeah, and Chilly Gonzalez played everything on piano, so.
He's sort of a wizard, huh?
Yeah, he's a wizard, and actually, I didn't even know, and he didn't know we both loved this musical. I was just telling him what I was going to do, and he's like, oh, I'll play piano, let's do it, you know. I still do it, but he's not my piano player, but I got asked to do it at a state theater in Munich
as a
season this year.
Yeah.
Like that you have 5.
Part of the run. Yeah,
part of the run. So I would have done it twice every month. But I would screw up my album cycle, so I'm not going to do it. I can't do it. But I'm going to go do it once in Munich on October 10th.
How is it different? How is it staged? What do you have up there?
It's just me.
Just with no props.
I have a whip.
Yeah.
For the second half when I have to give him 39 lashes.
Uh-huh.
Give myself, him, whatever. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's...
There's a piano. There's me. I have a very simple costume on the first half. And then the second half, I have more of an augmented, like, big gold costume.
Uh-huh.
And that's it.
What are the pictures I saw of you being crucified?
Oh, with the big...
Dick.
Dick.
Yeah.
That also is like another... This Russian artist came up to me and he said, I bet you need a cross for this show. I'm going to make you one.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. I didn't give him, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And he made me this like.
It's a giant cock.
I don't
cross.
Even know, like 30 foot long. It's all muscle
uh-huh.
and there's a heart in it. People don't realize like all the like body organs in it. And then at the head and the head top is a penis.
Is that, do you use that in the show?
I did on the Berlin run. But now I just become the cross.
Oh, okay.
I just like roll down some extra gold. So I am the cross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mostly because I couldn't travel with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Where is it?
And I think it was like an unnecessary like
Why hit him over the head with a cock at the end?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, some people, that was, to them, they were like, finally, it's a Peaches version.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's essential to the show.
Right.
But it was there, and this artist made it, and it was great, so.
Where's the cock cross being housed now?
In a place called Howe Theater, yeah, where we did the original production.
It's there.
It's just under there. And the Russian artist, every time I come back to Berlin, he's like, where's my penis cross?
And where are you with religion in general? Like, how do you feel about it? Does it play?
I'm pretty mad at it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they screwed up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have any practice, spiritual practice?
The spiritual practice I'm not mad at. I'm just mad at, like, you know, organized religion.
Sure.
You know. Yeah. But spiritual, I mean, I want to meditate.
Yeah, me too.
But do you?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I want to.
Yeah, so we'll do it sometime.
Yeah,
we'll
get 5 minutes. Why can't you do five minutes a day? Why is that so hard?
That's something you get asked? I get asked that. It's like, no, it's really easy.
I ask myself.
You do?
Yeah.
5 minutes, just sit and breathe. Clear your mind.
And then all of a sudden, what time is it? Where's my phone?
Yeah. And, but people who do it are like, so sort of like, it is like, it changes your life.
Yeah.
And I just fucking do it.
Yeah. I don't need to be in, you know, part of a TM or part of a group of it. I just want to do it.
A couple of them have hit me lately.
Yeah.
The TM people.
Yeah.
They're like, it's not a cult.
Yeah.
You just have to pay some money.
Yeah. You just pay us.
Yeah. Pay them once. You just pay once.
A lot. And you get a mantra.
Right, like $3,000 or something, right?
No, it's ridiculous.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
What are you doing in L.A.? Videos?
Living.
You live here?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I live here in Berlin.
Yeah?
I have a house here. And
Where do you live? What part of town?
Silver Lake.
Oh, you're right here?
Yeah.
You're down the street?
Mm-hmm.
Hanging out?
Yeah, going to Amara Kitchen.
Did you ever do any of those performance art pieces, like in museums and
things? I tried. Well, you know Cynthia Plastercaster?
Yeah.
So she plastercast my breasts.
Uh-huh.
And I asked
it's a
her.
A change for her.
Yeah. No, she started that in the 90s. She's like,
doing boobs?
I got to do girls. I got to do boobs.
Enough cocks.
Yeah. So it's a lot of cocks.
Yeah.
So when I was in Chicago, I said, can we do it as a performance?
Uh-huh.
And I was playing like a little show at Weekend Records. I don't think it exists anymore. But we like did a performance. So my friend had to do one of the castings, you know, and she was really nervous because she's never done it live. So we tried to make it like a live performance.
And it worked?
The boob that she did worked, and my friend was so nervous. My friend Malcolm is kind of like, ah.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm really close to your boob, help.
That one didn't come out as good?
No, but it's okay.
Got one good boob out of it.
Yeah. All you can ask for, one good boob out of it.
One good boob. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you.
It was great.
Thank you.
You feel happy?
Very happy.
All right. Well, good luck with the new record.
Thank you.
Wasn't that great? Go check out her work. It's mind-blowing and mind-fucking. All the good things art's supposed to do. She'll mind-blow you and also mind-fuck you. That's what, me. Okay? I'll keep it personal. I don't mind. All right. So you can go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs, as usual. Get on the mailing list, check the episode guide, check my calendar. I'm coming to Australia. What else? Oh, those of you who noticed that we didn't get a Boomer Lives In, I spent so long trying to play Happy Birthday on my guitar that it actually eluded me. So thank you for noticing. Boomer Lives! Hey folks, this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. You know all those times you've heard guests sneeze on the show? Well, actually, you don't hear any of that because we cut the sneezes out when we're editing. But take my word for it, people definitely sneeze in here, and when they they do, I've got a box of Kleenex on the table right in front of them so they can use one and get right back to business. And here's what Kleenex means to me. A tissue that will hold up. We've all used those other tissues that you blow holes right through. When I see Kleenex, I know that tissue is up for the job. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.